Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this very fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the premier law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about us, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com. Also, I invite you to subscribe to my blog, blueprintforwealth.org, where there's content on audio, video, and written content on taxes, estate planning, and business planning. And lastly, please read my column in the Washington Business Journal entitled Blueprint for Wealth, which appears once every month. Today, we're going to continue our discussion of the fiscal cliff. I'm pulling a lot of the content today from an article written by Tony Needy at Forbes magazine. It's a great article. If you want more information on his articles on the fiscal cliff, go to Forbes. And this article really, I think, nicely lays out some of the confusion that surrounds the fiscal cliff. And we don't, obviously, at this late stage in the game, I hope that Congress and the president can resolve the impasse and avoid us from having to fall over the fiscal cliff. But really, the question is, what is the fiscal cliff and what are its ancillary economic impacts on you individually and on the economy as a whole? The convergence of two events is really what the fiscal cliff is, and that happens on December the 31st. It's the expiration of almost every tax cut that was passed since 2001, mainly in the Bush administration, but several tax cuts also passed in the Obama administration, and a scheduled automatic reduction in government spending known as sequestration. Is it going to send the world off its orbit into outer space, into deep dark space, or shift the world balance of power? I don't know. I doubt that, but it could lead to some very severe consequences. While going over the cliff is going to improve our deficit problem that we've got, because it's going to reduce the deficit by adding net cash inflows, it also is going to cause our economy to drop. One of the predictions by the Congressional Budget Office is that real growth, gross domestic product, GDP, is going to drop by 0.5% if they let us fall over the fiscal cliff in 2013. That's known as negative growth, and also unemployment would be scheduled to rise to as high as 9.1%, which essentially is going to kickstart a recession. And the reason why depends on which component of the fiscal cliff we're talking about, whether it's reduced spending or increased tax revenue, but it clearly is going to have a negative economic impact on the economy. And while the timing of the two events is merely coincidental, there's no denying that at a minimum, the required spending cuts are indirectly related to the expiring tax cuts. And that's because there's revenue that's lost resulting from the cuts, which contributed to our now bloated deficit, which in turn contributed to our need to cut spending even further. More directly, the changes in governmental spending are also the result of what happened back in 2011 when we hit the debt ceiling. Let me give you a little bit of background on that real quickly. For example, when the government wants to build a bridge or wage a war or pick up some extra padlocks for Area 51, they need a way to finance the expenditure. These funds come from one of two sources, either tax revenues or borrowing. For a number of years, the government has spent a lot more than it has collected in tax revenues, which means that it has to borrow to pay for the excess. And as you can imagine, consistently growing deficits and debt are a bad thing. Higher debt leads to a reduction in national savings. The interest on the debt leads to further reduction in savings. And all of this undermines investor and consumer confidence. It also jeopardizes the government's ability to continue to borrow at reasonable interest rates. And if you take all of these things combined, you may end up in a crisis similar to what Greece has experienced. Because of these potential consequences, we cannot allow Congress to run amok with their old corporate credit card. As a result, there's a maximum amount of debt that can be incurred by the government, and this maximum is referred to as the debt ceiling. Back in the summer of 2011, years of rampant spending in excess of tax revenues finally caught up to the government, and it maxed out its credit limit and ran up against the debt ceiling. Rather than risk defaulting on the existing debt, the government just raised the debt ceiling, but it essentially punished itself for spending too much by increasing its ability to spend by imposing certain punishments that are effectively the reductions in spending that are automatically going to take place on January the 1st. Before hitting that sequestration, it did give itself an out. The government agreed, the Congress and the president agreed, that if it could reach a decision on what cuts should be made by November of 2011, then sequestration would not be necessary. They appointed a bipartisan commission. Republicans and Democrats were supposed to participate in this bipartisan effort to cut the deficit. They couldn't reach an agreement by November of 2011. And so sequestration automatically will take place on January 1, 2013, because November 2011 came and went without any agreement being reached. So where do these spending cuts come in? Well, I also said earlier that the expiring Bush and Obama tax cuts are indirectly responsible for the reduction in federal spending. The tax cuts reduced rates, expanded credits, and increased deductions, which obviously reduced tax revenue and drove up the deficit and government's need to borrow beyond what it was projected to do. So the cuts that are coming out as a result of all of this are as follows. On the defense side, spending for 2013 is scheduled to be cut automatically by $24 billion, which doesn't sound a whole lot when you're talking about an overall deficit of $15 trillion, but it's still a significant amount of money. On non-defense programs, the government is going to cut spending automatically by at least $40 billion in 2013. And these reductions are focused primarily on Medicare programs. So cutting spending is not necessarily a bad thing because we're reducing our deficit. So is that really a bad thing? Well, the answer speaks to bigger issues regarding the fiscal cliff. We admit reduced spending is a good thing in the long run. When the government is spending less, the government is buying less, however. And those goods and services that would have been purchased for $65 billion or $64 billion are now taken out of the economy, which could lead to a short-term recession. Here's an example. If the required spending cuts prevent a bridge in Minnesota from getting built, there would be harmful direct and indirect impacts on the economy. If the bridge had been constructed, the government would purchase raw materials, steel, concrete, etc., and they'd be purchasing services, labor, making for a banner year for the lucky contractor that's building that Minnesota bridge. Kill the bridge, and all those direct inflows into the economy go with it. Taking it one step further, building the bridge requires a team of laborers who in turn would earn more disposable income that they could pump back into the economy, buying disposable razors and throw pillows and tickets to football games. Take the bridge away, and these workers hit the unemployment line. So what is the short-term impact caused by all of this? Well, according to the Congressional Budget Office, if the government opts to postpone the required spending cuts for 2 years, the economy would actually pick up 3.75% in gross domestic product, and approximately 800,000 additional jobs would be added to the economy in 2013, as opposed to the recession that's predicted if we let sequestration occur automatically. How do the expiring Bush tax provisions fit in? Well, they're the other half of the fiscal cliff equation. As I mentioned earlier, and I've mentioned on several shows on Blueprint for Wealth, on January 1st, 2013, almost every major tax cut enacted since 2001 is set to expire. In addition, the Obamacare legislation, which contains several additional tax provisions increasing taxes, will take hold. As I've mentioned in the past, for simplicity's sake, I'll summarize those tax cuts very quickly. The Bush-era tax cuts cause the highest individual tax rate to drop down to 35%. When they expire, the highest individual tax rate goes up to 39.6%. Add on top of that the health care surtax, if you will, that was imposed by President Obama's health care legislation of 3.8%, potentially subjects dividend and interest and net investment income at the highest rate to a tax of 43.6%. The estate tax is also impacted significantly. The highest exemption that each individual enjoys goes from $5.12 million per person for gift, estate, and generation skipping transfer tax in 2012 and drops automatically to $1 million for gift and estate tax. The rates go up from 35% to 55%. Another significant one is the expiration of the alternative minimum tax patch. The expiration of that patch causes millions of taxpayers to be subject to the AMT in 2012. And the temporary payroll tax cut that was enacted way back at the beginning of 2011 and has continued into this year expires at the end of this year. So the impact of all of this is significant. If you want to know more about the impact of the tax cuts on you or how the fiscal cliff will affect you, give us a call at Odin, Feldman & Pittleman at 703-218-2100 or visit us on the web at OFP Law. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth.